How'd a Canadian boy end up down in Houston, Texas?
It's kind of a combination of, you know, bad decisions and luck, I guess.
From Rocks Exploration, our family-owned small business, this is Rocks Energy, a show about the oil and gas industry as we live it and breathe it each day. I'm Adam Oxen. Let's get on with the show.
Justin, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Adam, thanks so much for having me. I'm pumped to get on the show with you guys here.
Absolutely. Yeah, we appreciate it. So for anyone who doesn't know, Justin Gauthier is an oil field service sales and account manager at AES Drilling Fluids. He hosts two different energy podcasts and pretty prolific on LinkedIn with your posting rate too. So
sometimes it comes in waves, man. I get these creative juices flowing and then I'll post multiple times a day for like 4 days, and then I'll get sideswiped with other random life things, and then it'll be like 3 or 4 days. Yeah. But no, I try to stay active on LinkedIn, man. It's probably single-handedly the most important thing, especially salesmen or business development folks can be doing right now. But anyway, sure. Yeah, it's,
I'm so sure. So is it more mayhem than method?
No, I would say at the beginning. You're talking about just content on LinkedIn?
Yeah, just your content creation on
there. So a lot of it is just spur of the moment. But what I really try and do is watch. It's not necessarily seeing how many likes I can get, but it's tracking and seeing what works, what doesn't, what, where the attention is, right? Because it's, at the end of the day, LinkedIn is underpriced attention. We are the product of LinkedIn. However, you can leverage its the ability to have so much reach and tell a story, tell a message, and especially, you know, because more and more people and more companies are doing, you know, messaging through digital media, especially on the B2B side on LinkedIn, it's really just trying to figure out how you can get in front of people's eyeballs. And because people are on LinkedIn, TikTok, Instagram, and for all those out there, TikTok is not for 7-year-old girls anymore. The average TikTok user is anywhere from, I think it's like 28 to like 42. So for those people out there that are in B2B that are saying, oh, TikTok's just for whatever, they probably said the same thing about Instagram, and look at Instagram now. So I always laugh about that. But anyway, I digress. There's method, but there's also madness, and it's a little bit of everything else sprinkled on top. But it's fun. And I mean, again, it's free marketing.
Yeah. And that content's working for you over time, right? Like you can be in bed and those posts are still out there. They're still getting traction. I mean, obviously you want to get into people's feeds, but
sure,
those are working for you beyond just that initial post, right?
Yeah. And there's certainly strategy behind it, right? Like I think anyone who's interested in creating content for the right reasons should do research, just like anything, right? I mean, and you can certainly start posting stuff, but at the end of the day, if it's content that's selfless and you're truly trying to add value for your community, that's where the rubber hits the road. Because you can't create content for everybody. And I've tried it, like, because I have so many interests, right? But at the end of the day, I feel it's interesting. If you, the more niche you get, you may think, oh, well, I'm only reaching X amount of people, but you need to make a difference within those people that are connected to you. And if you're trying to, like, one day, like for me, if I'm trying to create content for health and fitness buffs, but then I'm trying to create content for people who like beards, but then I'm creating content for people who are interested in drilling operations, the chances are there's not one single person who likes all of that. So that's where I'm trying to fine tune, is like really find my niche and double down on that. And while I still have other interests, it's more effective to stay in your lane and talk about what you know and then really dive into that. Because at the end of the day, I mean, the markets are huge regardless of where you're at.
Yeah, yeah.
Or what you're talking about. So that's just something that I've really been interested in lately and trying to do some research and figuring out how to basically maximize the value, right? That's what you're trying to do. So
that's interesting, man. No, I think you're totally right. Like that's the thing about like the internet. You can reach any audience around the world. And so even if, like you said, it's really niche, I mean, that niche is worldwide. And that's the cool thing about the internet and technology, what you can do with it. So
yes, you're exactly right.
Yeah. So What's the story? Like, what's your origin story in oil and gas? Like, how did a Canadian boy end up down in in Houston, Texas, doing drilling fluids? Is this fate? Is this destiny? Is it
it's
family? Is it what? How'd you end up?
It's kind of a combination of, you know, bad decisions and and luck, I guess. But they say luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And so I guess, you know, I've been preparing for this very moment to be on the podcast with you. But going back to back in the day, you know, grew up, born in Calgary, Alberta, you know, raised by a single mother until I was five. She moved us out to British Columbia when I was 5 years old, lived in Vernon, British Columbia until I was 18. Through high school, I didn't care about school. I didn't care about anything except for sports and partying, to be honest with you. I had no intentions to go back to school. All I wanted to do was make money so I could, you know, buy a boat and wakeboard and water ski and party with my friends after high school. But there were no jobs when I was done high school. There was nothing really out there that I noticed that really could provide an income for me that I was looking for, especially without really doing well in school and not having going to college. But when I was right before graduating high school, my cousin came from Calgary to visit us, and he was selling wellheads for FMC at the time. And he would always talk about work with the conversation of, I'm taking customers out golfing, I'm going fishing, I'm going taking trips to, you know, Whistler to take people heli skiing. And so I said, John, what are you doing? Like, it sounds like,
how do all I you get do, in on this?
Yeah. How do I get
I
in on
want
this?
A piece of this.
Yeah. I can party with the best of them. I love having a good time. And if I can get paid for it, sign me up. And he said, oh, you want to get in the oil field, huh? And I said, yeah, I could do it. And I grew up in an entrepreneurial family where I was essentially trained to sell at an early age. And so I was like, I know how to sell. And yeah, it sounds like you sell some cool stuff. I could do it, and, you know, show me a good time and, you know, whatever. And so he said, okay. He said, you realize it took me at least 10 years to get downtown Calgary. I said, well, I'll do it in half the time, John. I said, watch this. He said, okay, well, here's what you got to do. There's a program called the Pitts Roughneck Training Course. Drive to Nisku as soon as you're done graduating. Do the two-week course, and you'll be well on your way. So I do that. Well, anyway, I graduated high school. I think it was June or July of 2004. And then in August 18th, I don't know why I remember the date, I was standing in front of a precision drilling rig that was half assembled, and they said, all right, get to work and
put it together.
Yeah. And so
trial by fire, huh?
Exactly. So yeah, I got hired on with precision drilling, thought I was going to be working downtown Calgary. That was obviously not the case. The first job, or the first well we drilled, or that I was, you know, on the rig with while we were drilling, was Drayton Valley. So just northwest of Calgary, west of Edmonton. And yeah, I worked there, and I told myself, this sucks because I'm away from my friends. I'm away from everything that I love. I'll do this for a few months, get some money, and then I'll get a job back home. Well, my mom was like, you either stay working on the rigs or you go back to school. And I told myself, I'm not going back to school. Like, I hate school. I'm not doing it. Anyway, 3 years later, I realized, okay, I don't want to be on a rig for the rest of my life. So then I ended up moving to Calgary, Alberta, went and did my petroleum engineering technology degree at SAIT, which is a fairly well-known tech school in Calgary. And then after that, got hired on with Canadian Energy Services, which is a drilling fluids company up in Canada. And yeah, the rest is history, really. They transferred me, after a year working there, they transferred me to the Marcellus. So in 2010, I got transferred to the Marcellus because we had purchased a U.S. drilling fluids company. It was FMI, Fluids Management. They were out of Houston. But one of their biggest customers started drilling in the Marcellus in 2010, obviously taking advantage of the shale revolution. And so they needed help. We were picking rigs up. I think we're picking an average of like two or three rigs up a day for, probably 6-8 months.
Wow.
It was just going nuts. And so they needed help. Went there, got to be exposed to the, you know, U.S. unconventional shale play. It was amazing. Bounced around, worked in Denver, and then ultimately landed in Houston in 2013. Yeah, 2013. And right before that, I ended up going back to the field. I wanted to get some more experience as a mud engineer. So I was a mud engineer for a few years, bounced around the U.S. Basically, they put me in every basin that they had work in just so I could get exposed to as much as possible. Yeah, and then started my sales and business development career in 2013. And yeah, that's basically how it all went down.
Yeah, and that's awesome, man.
Somehow my wife followed me through all of this.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's good.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. Cool background. It's crazy to hear, you know, you growing up in Canada and then working through all those different things and realizing, you know, not wanting to go to school. And sounds like you're an action-oriented guy, which I think kind of makes me wonder, like, what, like, I'm guessing from your background in that helped propel you into, like, launching, you know, a podcast. Which podcast did you launch first? The AES Flowline or the
Oil and Gas Onshore? Yeah.
Oil and Gas Onshore.
And yeah, I would say you were right. Like, I've never been one to just do sort of one thing. I've always had a side hustle. I mean, in college, I was selling like fake Gucci and Louis Vuitton stuff from China. Like I always had a little side hustle, even in high school. Yeah. And yeah. So like, I've never just had a job and stayed in it. I've always had like, cause I just have so many interests all the time. So I'm always seeking for the next, you know, sort of thing that interests me, and I dive into it.
So what was the goal with the Onshore podcast with Oil and Gas Onshore? Like, is this, I mean, you're working in the oil and gas industry niche, like, so how did you approach that? Or how did you look at like that, like the formation of it coming up with like so what it would be about?
Yeah. So there's a bit of background. So I was extremely fascinated. And again, I dove all into podcasting from a consumer standpoint years ago. And it really started because I was wanting to open a gym, and there was a podcast called Barbell Shrugged from guys out of Memphis. And they had a full podcast series of how to basically start a CrossFit gym and how to build it, the ups and downs, and really just laid out a blueprint. And I was fascinated to think that someone would put this content out for free. Then I started looking at other podcasts, started listening to Joe Rogan, Tim Ferriss, Ben Greenfield, you name it, Mind Pump. There's like, I listened to a ton of them, and I just couldn't believe how much free information that you could access through podcasting. And then I thought, well, shoot, I mean, I'm in oil and gas. I need to like learn more as I'm driving, this, that, and the other, because all I do is read news articles and whatever sort of technical information I get my hands on. So I started looking for oil and gas podcasts. And at the time, there was only a handful. Then one of it was Oil and Gas This Week, and it was Mark LaCour and James Hahn, which then Jake Corley ended up getting on board with Mark. And so I listened to Oil and Gas This Week for that whole evolution of it. And then all of a sudden they started talking about happy hours and having sponsorships. So I was like, well, I want to get involved. Like, to me, I've always kind of had an intuition of like what's coming just based off like sort of pop culture or like trends in like popular culture type things. And so I was like, I got to get involved with this podcasting stuff. This stuff is fascinating because I can see the growth of it and I wanted to be a part of it. And so I hit up I hit up Jake, and this was years ago, probably 2017. And I said, hey, I heard on your pod, I'm so-and-so, I'm a young oil field salesman, I've been in the oil and gas industry, blah, blah. I'd love to be a part of OGGN. If you guys are looking for sponsors for happy hours, let me know. And there was so much popularity at the time, they didn't have any availability. But then Mark LaCour said, hey, well, why don't you guys come in? We're starting a bunch of new podcasts. Why don't you and your marketing manager, or whoever you want to help represent AES, come and see about sponsoring a podcast? I thought, that's a cool opportunity. Let's do it. So I brought our marketing manager in. Well, at the time, podcasting wasn't quite as popular as it is now.
It's not like what it is now. And right, so it was just getting off the ground.
Yeah. And so, you know, from a cost perspective, it just didn't make sense for us as a company to dump that kind of money into sponsoring a podcast. And so we didn't do that, but then Mark said, hey, why don't we grab lunch and let's chat about some other opportunities. And so at the time, you know, went for lunch. He said, look, I like your style, this, that, and the other. Would you ever host a podcast? And I said, actually, yeah, I'd love to. I think that'd be fascinating. I said, I don't know how to do all the back end work. I don't have an IT background. I said, I'm just a dumb roughneck from Alberta, man. I'm like, I can talk with the best of them, but tell me how to put something on the internet and like publish it to iTunes. I said, I am lost. He said, don't worry about that. We got a team of people to do it. All we need you to do is talk and then send us the raw files. I said, I can do that.
I can do that.
Yeah.
I can talk all day.
Yeah. And he said, you pick the topics. And I said, well, I love the Joe Rogan, Tim Ferriss style interview. Like, I want to interview people from all walks of the oil field. And I said, what I'd love to do, because I mean, forever, it's been us against the world, right? Oil and gas against the world. We still face it. And we probably always will. But I said, it'd be cool to interview people that help humanize our industry and give people who otherwise wouldn't get a chance to sit in front of these people that we're just the same as everyone else. We're working hard and we're just doing the best we can with what information we have. So
yeah,
a lot of people don't understand macroeconomics and markets and climate change. And most people think they do, but a lot of people don't. And so I was like, why don't we have people like experts come on and like share their perspective and maybe it'll help change people's minds. And
that's awesome.
He was like, I love it. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that's kind of how it started. And then I've ever since then, once a week, I've released an episode talking to random people from all over the energy space.
That's awesome. That's great. And so I saw recently, I think I saw you posted that the flow line from AAS Drilling Fluids, you guys recently hit like 50,000 downloads. So that's awesome. Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
What's the story there? I mean, was your marketing manager a few years later like, hey, these podcasts make sense now. Like, why aren't we making one? Or like,
so,
you know, what?
Yeah.
What was that?
It was a conversation I had, again, Matt Offenbacher. I said, Matt, I said, we got to get in on this podcasting stuff. I said, no other service company is doing it. And I said, how cool would it be? And my sort of idea behind it at the time was everyone knows what a mud manual is, right? All the mud companies have a mud manual. MI, Halliburton, everyone has their own. I said, how cool would it be to have a mud manual, but a podcast? And I said, we could go through topics and essentially have an audio mud manual. And it would be a podcast because you can have a library and you could search topics and whatever you want. I said, people, especially like for me, I mean, I've spent, you know, a long time working in Fushan and this, that, and the other. As oil field folks, we spend so much time behind the windshield. I said, what a great opportunity for not only internally for our people to learn and be educated, but for customers, for competitors, I don't care. But
yeah,
if we can put out quality technical information and educate people, think of how much credibility that adds to us.
Hey, it's Adam here. I wanted to tell you more about Rocks Exploration. At Rocks, we drill, complete, and operate oil and gas wells right here in Oklahoma. What does that mean? That means we make money through the drill bit by drilling for and producing oil and gas. But we also make money for our working interest partners. What's a working interest partner? That's an individual or small business that invests in an oil and gas well. It's not unlike a real estate investment. You see, drilling a well is extremely costly, from geology to land to legal to drilling and completion and production. It takes a lot of time, resources, and people. Rocks takes care of all of that, and our working interest partners align with us to take advantage of our expertise and experience. Each drilling project brings together tax write-offs and potentially high ROIs. So if you're interested in learning more about Rocks Exploration and our drilling projects, head to rocks.energy. That's www.rox.energy to find out more.
And then on top of that, it's, again, it's underpriced attention. It costs, you know, $1,500 to get all the equipment, maybe $50-$60 editing each episode. I mean, the amount of money we've spent and the ROI that we've gotten on a podcast dwarfs anything we've done, any booth we've done at an AED conference, and nothing against conferences, but I was like, we have to get outside the box because what everyone's doing now is flooded and nothing works. And so I was like, let's do a podcast. And he was like, man, I like the sounds of it. So then like literally that day we went to Guitar Center and bought like a bunch of gear and just started recording.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So I saw that there on one of you guys' recent podcasts, I saw that there's this kind of friction with Matt. You mentioned about Afrons. Is that right?
Afrons. Yeah.
Afrons.
Yeah, yeah.
And you guys, I don't know, apparently maybe within the like drilling mud community, like maybe started some maybe a little bit of ire. So like what's going on there? What why does Matt hate him? And what was that about?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. For those who aren't maybe familiar, is we did a podcast called Why Matt Hates Afrons. And I don't know how long ago it was, but we released an episode on Afrons explaining the technology, what the application's for, this, that, and the other. And just to add to sort of, you know, the whole idea about the podcast, a lot of times in the drilling space, we have to repeat ourselves so many times. We'll repeat ourselves to one operator about why we're doing something. And then the very next day, someone else will say, we want to do X, Y, Z. And it's like, oh, we literally just explained this yesterday. Okay, let's revisit this. So we created a podcast on Afrons because everyone was coming to us. And there's just, you know, mud is, you know, it's very cyclical. It's like all of a sudden everyone jumps on this bandwagon of wanting to pump this or do that, whatever the case may be.
Is that because people like are talking to each other, or they hear like, well, yeah, use this? Is it just word of mouth, or is it?
I think a lot of it's word of mouth. And I think, you know, mud companies and any service company, you know, does a, I would say, decent job of when they do something, whether they break a record, whether they save an operator money, you know, they're going to talk about it and they're going to try and highlight it so that way they can essentially develop more business and market themselves as, hey, we did something special, look at us, let's do it again and we can do it for you.
Right.
So I think it's one of those where someone will do some, you know, an operator will try something, it'll work. And then that service company and that operator says, hey, it was a win. And then next thing you know, it kind of spiders out and, you know, everyone's trying to chase the next best well. So if a neighboring, an operator hears of Joe Blow Oil and Gas drilled a well in 18 days and their best, you know, their P90 is, you know, 50 days or whatever, then it's like, oh, wow, okay, well, like, we need to figure out a way to get our days down. And what did they do? Oh, they used, you know, Slick'em product 101. Well, shoot, we better try it because it worked for them, so let's try it. And then it just kind of spreads like that. So it just, these kind of waves of like excitement go, and it's kind of the FOMO. I mean, we're humans. We have the fear of missing out. If someone's trying something cool and it saves money, why would we not try it, right? And right. Then, of course, you know, there's some operators out there that are, you know, barn burners that whatever they do, everyone's like, oh, if they're doing it, we got to do it. So it's just kind of one of those type of things. So Afron's has been, so going back to the question, and one thing that we really like to do is we, and Matt especially, I mean, he's very sharp when it comes to, if someone comes to him with a technology, he doesn't read headlines and draw conclusions based off a little bit of what he knows. He'll read countless papers and dive deep and do probably 15, 20, 30 hours of research, synthesize that information, and then have a position and be able to back it up. So Afron's has a certain application, but what it gets marketed off as a lot of times is it's these micro bubbles that essentially lighten up the hydrostatic so you don't have to add LCM or as much to prevent lost circulation. The literature sort of debunks that.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Matt was saying was he sees other companies go out there and market this stuff for applications that it don't actually like fit the criteria of what it was designed for.
Right.
So if for him, it gets frustrating as someone who reads the literature and reads the data,
yeah,
and understands the limitations, is like, no, that's not what the literature says. That's not what is actually happening. And stop coming to me with these like silly, because he's our technology manager.
Yeah. And Matt also brought up, right, that like there might be other additives in there in your mud mix that
right.
might actually
yeah.
be doing.
So they just get to
what
like,
you think the Afron is doing.
Yeah. So let's say you have a cake. And you bake a cake and you have 10 pounds of sugar and then one drop of vanilla extract. Well, all of a sudden the cake tastes so good. Oh, it's because there's vanilla extract in there. No, probably because there's 10 pounds of sugar in there. But the vanilla extract just gets to join the party and then claim to fame.
Right.
Very basic. Yeah, I just came off the top of my head. But
no, I got you.
That's kind of,
I realized something. Yeah, I need to step back for like anyone who doesn't like, we've just jumped in this, like talking about drilling fluids, but like for someone, say like one of my family members, it's not an oil and gas, who has no idea what drilling fluids are, drilling mud. Like, can you give like a 30 second, 45 second, like this yeah. is what drilling fluids are and do?
Sure. So, you know, we're drilling a well. So essentially we have a drill with a bunch of pipe that we're going down to access hydrocarbons. Well, if you were to just, you know, have a bit turning into the ground without any fluid circulating to pull all the rocks out, you wouldn't get very far. So it's essentially, it's a fluid used to circulate down and then around to help clear all the rock and everything out of the hole so that you can drill deeper and really
keep your bit cool.
Yeah. And so yeah. like the biggest thing is well control. So when you're drilling in the ground and you have a column of fluid, it has a certain density, which helps keep the hole open and prevent any oil and gas and rocks from falling in. So it helps keep the hole open. It helps clean out the hole. And then there's some secondary and tertiary benefits. Yes, cooling the bit, make the mud motor turn, blah, blah, blah. But it's essentially to help drill the hole, keep the hole open, and provide enough, you know, fluid velocity to pull all the rocks out that you're digging through. That's the way I would explain it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, depending where you're drilling, you have to cater to the rock you're drilling, and a lot of it comes down to designing a certain fluid that gives you the best bang for your buck. You know what I mean? And then, you know, with that, that's a market. So everyone tries to get tricky and fancy with the drilling fluid market to be able to sell and make money. And, you know, that's capitalism at its finest. It's great.
Yeah. No, that's great. Thanks for that explanation. And so I've got one, more question before we kind of wrap up.
Sure.
I know you said, you know, you're very entrepreneurial. You've got a lot of interests. You got hustles. You're all over the place. NFTs. Okay.
Oh,
I saw what's up with that. When, okay. You've got Drip Club Boys. I guess you're minting your own NFTs,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. So you've got this NFT project.
Yeah.
When did you get into NFTs? What, like, and maybe, I don't know, how much background do we need to give here on NFTs?
I mean, has anyone played Sims, or did anyone play Minecraft, or did anyone play any video game growing up? It's the same thing. You buy skins. Anytime you've ever bought anything to flex on a video game, that's an NFT. It's essentially a digital asset. So when you're ripping around, whatever, let's say back in the day, people paid, I don't know, Zelda, and you want to throw a shield on, whatever. That's an NFT. Now it's evolved to something greater. But I mean, that's essentially what it is. It's a digital asset that you can claim that no one else can claim, and you can buy and sell it on a market. That's like the JPEG funny pictures that people are selling and buying for like millions of dollars. Like, that's the very fundamental basis of it.
Bored Ape Yacht Club. Yeah. All of these, right? And so, so what took you from being like, I mean, were you buying NFTs? Were you trading NFTs? Like, at what point were you like, man, this is rad. I've got to mint my own NFT.
Again, I listen to and I seek a lot of what's happening in culture. And some people would argue, but athletes, celebrities, and hip hop artists generally lead the trends in culture, and it all kind of trickles through. And I keep my finger on the pulse of all of it because there's opportunities there. And whether they're, I mean, and again, I because it interests me. So a handful of people that I started following, and I've always been interested in the crypto space, but I'm not like a huge crypto guy. I don't day trade crypto, but I try and at least do a couple hours a week of researching and keeping up with it. Well, these NFT things started happening, and I kept seeing people who have been extremely successful on kind of predicting the next wave start talking about them. And so I said, well, I need to start researching it. And then I started seeing large companies start getting involved with it. All of a sudden, Facebook starts, you know, changes their name to Meta. People really start talking Web 3.0. And so, again, a lot of people that have a lot of money, Mark Cuban, I mean, a lot of these folks who are like early adopters of things started talking and like started dabbling in it. And so I started listening, and then it was just this wave of people and like communities, building communities around NFT projects, and the arbitrage behind it was absolutely fascinating. And the amount of money that people were pouring into this, I was like, oh, this makes sense now. And then started listening to people buying and selling property in the metaverse, and then seeing how NFTs tie into that. And I was just, I would bet anybody $1 million right now that NFTs in the next 5 years, everyone's going to have something to do with NFTs. And it's going to be like, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, like, I don't know, like Facebook was just for college kids. Well, now look where it is. Like, it's that type of rush. And so I just knew I had to get in it. And I didn't necessarily mint an NFT project because I want to make millions of dollars. I think it'd be cool because I want to be like the first oil and gas representative to have an NFT project, and to help build a kind of community around people who also like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I always have enough skin in the game to where it keeps me interested and it keeps me dialed into what's going on. Because if I would have just listened to it and be like, oh, that's cool, then I wouldn't have worried about it. But the fact that now I like minted it, I understand how to get a wallet. I understand how to trade Ethereum. I understand, you know, what gas fees are. I understand how to, like, what a roadmap for an NFT project looks like. I understand, right. You know what I mean? Like, now I get it because I took the time to learn how to actually go through the process.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where it's at. And I mean,
have you followed like Gary Vaynerchuk on any of this?
Yeah. So
have you seen his V Friends?
Whenever I hear the word V Friends, I want to puke. Oh, and for all good reasons. So I've been like an avid listener to Gary Vaynerchuk for years. And he started talking about V Friends, this and that. And I think the floor price for V Friends when it came out was like, it was one ETH. Because on his podcast, he said, I have a huge announcement. Everyone get a MetaMask wallet and get one ETH. I had like 0.96 ETH. Okay. I didn't have enough. And I was like, I don't know. Now the floor price is freaking like 7 or like 12 ETH and they're worth $40,000 each.
It's hard to get one. V-Friends, right? I mean, they're pretty, yeah. It's like not, they don't move.
They don't. I mean, unless if you got like a serious bag, then you can buy one. So V-Friends 2 is coming out. So I'm pumped for that. I don't know what the floor price is going to be, but really quick on NFTs. So yeah. I don't know if you, have you heard of Fly Fish Club?
No, I haven't.
So again, let's talk about NFTs and why they're so, where the utility comes in. Flyfish Club is an NFT project backed by Gary Vaynerchuk, okay? It's essentially, if you go on OpenSea or Rarible, you can see the floor price is crazy. It's like, I don't know, like in US dollars, I think it's like 12 or 15 grand, okay? So what it is people are buying these NFTs and that's being funded to build a sushi restaurant in New York City. The only way you can access the sushi restaurant is having an NFT, but it also gives you exclusivity to different events within the sushi joint. You cannot access a restaurant unless you have these NFTs. It sounds obnoxious, whatever, but I guarantee you in 2 or 3 years, there's gonna be countless restaurants and exclusive clubs that you can't access without owning an NFT. And then you can buy and sell those on a market. And then because NFTs, you get royalties off every transaction, the creator then gets a piece of that. Yeah. In perpetuity. Like, it's insane.
I mean, that's what Vaynerchuk's done with his V Friends, right? Like, yes. They've like owning one of those NFTs is like a ticket to like the next 3 years of his conferences too, right? Yes. Like there's utility tied in there. Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, do you have any vision for that? Like with Drip Club Boys, like have you got that worked out or is that still like,
that's
where's that at?
Yeah, I don't have the utility worked out. I don't have an NFT roadmap. I mean, I'm not in a position to be able, like, I would love to do that eventually, but where I see myself going with that is partnering with someone who, like a company or something, and in the background talking with some people that I think I could sort of collaborate with to, because I think that's going to be eventually what happens. Like JP Warren, like if I was him, I'd be creating, like, I don't know why he hasn't already. If you're listening, you need to have 50 NFTs that you mint, put the floor price at like $50, have your crew connection have it, and then only people that have the NFTs do it. Like he's the person that should be doing it, not me, but I need to
JP,
learn.
If you're listening, Justin just called you out.
Yeah,
we need some crew club NFTs.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a couple other organizations. I mean, AADE, they should all your memberships, all this stuff should be NFTs.
You're just thinking, you're like a man of action. You're seeing these things, Justin, and you're like, I've got to get into this. I got to do it. And so you're like getting your toes in, you're testing the waters, you're feeling it out, and you're going to be kind of leading in that so that hopefully you can add value to other people when they're ready to get into that space.
Yeah, and that's exactly. And if I can help educate and just expose people to ideas and they take and run with it, like that's what I love. Like I love the evolution of just human, like, you know, human interaction, communication, sales, marketing, the business development. I mean, it all ties together.
That's awesome. Well, dude, this has been a great conversation. I mean, I think we've covered quite a bit. Like we've gone from Canada to like Houston, onshore, down to the drilling fluids and then up to the NFTs. Like, yeah. So I think we've covered a lot. I think this is going to be a cool show. People enjoy this.
So I hope so.
Thanks for doing it. And where do people go to get more Justin Gauthier?
I would just say hit me up on LinkedIn. You can, start there.
What is it? LinkedIn.com/Justin.
Justin Gauthier. Or just type it in. Or you can type in, go to OGGN's website, OGGN.com. But the best place is just go on LinkedIn, Justin, and then GAUTHIER. That's a good way to start. And I have obviously linked Instagram too. That's more of a personal page, but all my like business and actual like professional networking type stuff happens on LinkedIn. So
awesome.
Add me up. And if anyone likes anything we talked about today, please hit me up. Let's grab a coffee, Zoom, phone call. I love talking about all this stuff. So
that's awesome.
Yeah,
Justin, man. Thanks so much.
Adam, pleasure. Good luck with everything you guys are doing. I love it.
All right. Hey, I appreciate that. Hey, if you enjoyed the show, please do us a big favor and leave a review in whatever podcast app you listen to, or share with someone you think might enjoy this content. Thanks a lot for listening to Rocks Energy.